But sex isn't a hot topic just in Ecuador. My next guest just wrote a whole book about it. It's called Bonk: The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex. And this is a warning to our listeners that there will be some adult language used in this interview. So put your big boy ears on. Mary Roach, you found out that even though we talk about sex, we have a lot of sex, there hasn't been a lot of research done on it.
That's right. Well, you know, we're making progress, but really until Kinsey came along, there were very few people looking into it in the laboratory, bringing human beings in and studying them in the lab. That didn't really get rolling until this past century, which is kind of amazing because, you know, sex is pretty important.
What made you want to write this book?
I tend to write about the kind of things going on in laboratories that you wouldn't expect to be going on in laboratories. My first book was Stiff, was about kind of post-mortem careers of dead people.
Right.
And so it fits, kind of fits in with the grand scheme of my career. But the other thing, the way I got interested in it, I just came across this article about, it was in Film Quarterly, and it was talking about Masters and Johnson's films, and these are not the average film. This was they took footage of a woman's sexual responses from inside. They had basically a penis camera. And I remember just reading that and thinking, all right, sex research, next book.
So talk to me about the penis camera. How long is the lens? Does it depend?
It's not how long it is. It's how well it thrusts.
Well, what do we learn
actually
from
thrust?
It does. Okay. What do we learn from a penis camera?
The penis camera documented things like, they were interested in like lubrication, vaginal lubrication. What is that stuff? Where does it come from? They documented something called tenting, which is when the cervix sort of pulls away at a certain point in the proceedings. They documented, they were trying to look into whether or not there was any kind of, there was a rumor that the cervix would sort of suck up the sperm and make these gasping motions, and they were looking for that. They were all these rumors that, because you see, until someone built a penis camera, no one really knew what was going on in there.
Mary, I like in your book how you say one of the illustrations of vaginal lubrication looks like a triangle with a lot of teardrops in it, like a beautiful spring shower.
I don't know if Masters or Johnson or someone on their staff did the illustrations, but they look just like, you know, a passing summer shower is going through this woman's vagina. It does. And I thought, is that what goes on inside me? How lovely.
So let's go back through some of the sex researchers in your book. I mean, there's some of them are familiar, like the controversial Alfred Kinsey, and some are less well known, like this man named Robert Dickinson, who was very concerned, bless his heart, that bad sex was destroying a lot of marriages. Will you talk about him?
Sure. He was an extraordinary guy. He's actually, Robert Latou Dickinson is the man who got Kinsey interested in sex. Dickinson was quite old at the time he met with Kinsey. Kinsey had been studying gall wasp speciation, not nearly as scintillating. At least I don't think so. Maybe I don't know anything.
Well, you're
about
not a gall wasp,
are
you?
I'm not a gall wasp. That's true. Speak for yourself, Mary. But Dickinson was this gynecologist who had a practice in Brooklyn Heights from the 1890s through the 1930s, and he got interested in, he started interviewing his clients, and some of them were charity cases from the local tenements, and they were very frank in talking about sex, and it emboldened him to regularly do these interviews with women about their sexual practices, how they had sex, how they masturbated, what they enjoyed, what they didn't enjoy. He was an artist as well. He did these amazing drawings. There's this incredible book, The Atlas of Human Sex Anatomy, that Dickinson had made sketching his patients. And he then moved on to trying to learn about the biomechanics of intercourse using not a penis camera, but sort of a primitive precursor to it.
Didn't that atlas, that giant atlas of human sex anatomy, fall on the floor while your avuncular janitor was talking to you one day?
Yeah, it was a very Mrs. Robinson moment. You know, I leaned back and crossed my legs, and this thing had been propped against my desk. And, you know, the type on that is like 96 point. And I kicked it over, and it falls flat on the floor. And there's this, you know, big kind of glumpy guy, Frank, who was just chatting.
And poor
so
Frank.
We both looked down. I know. We both looked down at the floor, and there it says, Atlas of Human Sex Anatomy. And then we went back to talking about the Coke machine, and Frank never said anything about it.
Well, Mary, that sort of thrust you, if it were, in the same position as some of these sex researchers, which is people maybe looking at you thinking, are you a pervert because you're interested in studying sex? And these sex researchers have found it hard to get funding, right?
Because what happens is no matter what you're looking into with sex, it tends to raise eyebrows. I mean, somebody says, oh, what are you studying now? And you could say, oh, well, we're looking at, you know, the female sexual arousal and the disconnect between the body and the mind. And so we bring women in and we show them, you know, pornographic images. I'm sorry, you what? You what? Mm-hmm. to get someone aroused, you've got to find a way to do it. That in sex research, that usually they use what they call visual erotic stimulation and what we call pornography. That right there marks you as a pervert or as somebody who's up to no good or up to something other than what they purport to be. So they still face that.
When you end up talking about that visual erotic stimulation,
visual
porn.
VES, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about that, you explain this, the arousal differences between men and women and how women are fairly indiscriminate in what turns them on. This was surprising to me. We can even respond to pygmy chimpanzees that are getting busy.
It was really amazing work done by Meredith Chivers. And what... Women, if you show women pornographic imagery, they will have a physiological response, not necessarily subjective. If you ask them, they may say, no, that didn't do anything for me. But if you measure vaginal blood flow, which is pretty simple to do, you will get, you could show them gay, straight, whatever sexual imagery, bonobo apes, and you will get a response. Whereas men, you will only get a response to imagery that fits their sexual orientation. So it is. It runs counter to the stereotype.
But you mentioned that women are also more distractible. You cite your favorite quotation from one of Alfred Kinsey's books that says, cheese crumbs spread in front of a pair of copulating rats will distract the female and not the male.
That is my favorite line in his entire oeuvre. Yes. I just wish that he had footnoted that so I could have tracked down the study.
What kind of cheese?
Well, yes, exactly.
So
Brie, Camembert.
So, Mary, one of the strangest chapters in your book focuses on some research in which lab rats were outfitted in polyester pants in an effort to get them laid, of course. Will you explain how this came about?
Absolutely. This was a researcher who's in Cairo who has done a tremendous amount of work. He studies reflexes of sexual intercourse and pelvic floor muscle reflexes. And so I'm leafing through a bunch of his papers that I've printed out. And then I come across this one that's called, it's basically looking at the effect of polyester on fertility, that is sperm count, and also on sexual activity. And in order to study it, before he went to humans, he looked at rats and he made little polyester pants for the rats. And I thought, that's it. I'm going to Cairo. If for no other reason, I want to meet the man who dressed rats in polyester pants. And in fact, he did. They had a little drawstring and a hole for the tail. And in fact, what he found out is that indeed polyester did lower the sperm count, probably because it's hot. It increases the temperature inside the scrotum and lowers the sperm count. But the other thing that he studied was he said they were less sexually active. And you had to say, duh.
I know, but you think of all the sex in and around polyester in the 70s. I guess it was all in spite of the fabric.
True. If they had done this in the 70s, it would have been a whole other study.
So, Mary, you got yourself intimately involved in sex in the laboratory. Will you talk about what you did for Dr. Deng?
Will you explain what is wrong with you? Yeah, Dr. Deng, he's a researcher. He's a radiologist, and he's come up with it. Well, he's working with this four-dimensional ultrasound technique where you can scan body parts in three dimensions, and it's also a moving picture image, which is pretty amazing. And he's documented things like lips pouting, a penis erecting, and he made a mention that he wanted to do sexual intercourse. That was his next plan. And I wrote him an email and said, well, I'd like to be there for this historic undertaking, and would that be okay? And he wrote back, you're welcome to interview me, but we've had some trouble recruiting brave volunteers for intimate study. That's mm-hmm. how he put it. And he said, if your organization can provide a couple, I'd be happy to arrange it. You know, so my organization called its husband.
Yes.
And said, hey, honey, you know how you haven't been to Europe in 25 years? Would you like to go? And I may have been a little bit stingy with the details. Ed agreed to it without really, he knew what was up. But I think he didn't really think it all the way through. And I didn't really either until we got there. And we were just filled with just the most unbelievable dread. Because an ultrasound, unlike MRI, people have had sex in an MRI machine for science. At least you have the privacy of the MRI scanner machine. And with ultrasound, the guy is right there. He's holding the wand to my belly.
Yeah. So you and Ed were in a spooning position. Dr. Deng is behind you guys. What I love is he offered to play the soundtrack to Les Mis on his laptop for you.
He did, because Ed said, you know, it's a hospital and we're wearing these dorky little Johnny tops. It could not be less romantic. And Ed is just joking. He says, well, where are the candles and the soft music? And Dr. Deng looks sort of chagrined. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. Wait, on my laptop, I have the soundtrack to Les Mis.
And of course, Master of the House always gets me going. We have about a minute left, Mary. What did you learn from your lab sex experience in front of and with Dr. Deng?
I learned that don't say yes to something unless you've really thought it through. No, that's not really what I learned. I learned actually that most things in life are a lot less difficult than you think. It really was like, you know, 10 minutes, this will be over with, and I'll move forward, and I'll have something interesting to write about in the book. And it was really not. I was taking notes the whole time. Poor Ed. It was really, talk to Ed. You need to get Ed on the phone. He's the one that, thankfully, there is Viagra. I learned that Viagra is an important pill.
You're like those Victorian women who had to think of the queen. You had to think of my book.
Yes.
Think of my book.
Yeah.
Finally, Mary, what is the most important question about sex we have yet to answer?
I would like to see somebody answer the difference. Like, is there a physiological factor that contributes to why some women easily have an orgasm from intercourse and some women don't? That's a pretty basic. And why the trigger for ejaculation? Nobody really understands that. So many things we need to learn.
Mary, thank you for joining us in doing very important work.
Thank you, Faith.
Mary Roach is a science writer in Oakland, California. Her new book is called Bonk, The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex. For more information about her, please visit our website, morefairgame.org.